We thought this was a really good time to talk to our good friend Ian Bremmer, who's head of the Eurasia Group. Ian, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
First of all, do you believe what John Kerry is saying? Everyone is really just ready to roll up their sleeves and write a constitutional process in Iraq right now rather than partition this place off?
The Kurds have very little incentive to do anything but continue with de facto independence. This is not a bad situation for them. I'm sure they're saying the right things to the Americans insofar as they'll get the Americans off their back. We've moved quite a ways towards partition over the course of the last fortnight. And Secretary Kerry knows that better than just about anyone.
So does this trip make him look ridiculous and emphasize those poll numbers that the administration is incapable of acting decisively here?
I don't know. I think 12 trips to Israel and Palestine made him look a little ridiculous. I think this makes him look less so because this is what a Secretary of State needs to do. I mean, we all do want Iraq to stay together, at least nominally. And I think that what Kerry is doing is trying to put the Kurds on notice that a move towards actual plebiscite on independence would be a very bad idea right now. And probably said privately, many of the things that the Americans might have on offer or not, depending on how they behave going forward. So I think he needs at least some nominal support for the process from the Kurds, and I suspect he'll get that.
Does somebody have to talk to ISIS here? Does somebody have to figure out what their agenda is, what they want, if they have territorial aspirations that are specific? Or does ISIS just get declared some persona non grata here?
Well, this is what's interesting, right, is that the Kurds have good reason to stick with what they have but not declare independence. ISIS has effectively declared an Islamic State. They now control, of course, all the border crossings between Iraq and Syria. So they do live up to their name in that regard. But no one's going to recognize that state. And everyone,
the Kurds must already be talking to ISIS about their border checkpoints around Erbil.
I'm sure they are. And again, we saw as soon as they took Kirkuk, you know, sort of the oil-rich area city historically belonging to the Kurds in the north, ISIS bled out very quickly. I mean, they're going to fight the Kurds very clearly and very well, the Peshmerga forces, on territory that that they actually hold a majority population in. That's the problem with Iraq, right? What it really amounts to is for 40 years, a secular Ba'athist dictatorship supported by the United States and the international community was able to hold together something that, from a territorial perspective, made very little sense. Now, since then, the Ba'athists have been removed. The United States and the international community has paid less interest. We're certainly much less interested in paying for outcomes and having troops on the ground. And what's going to hold the country? What is nominally the glue that keeps the country working? It's wholly sectarian. So, I mean, whether or not it's ISIS that was the tipping point in Iraq, this clearly was going to fall apart, right? And that is what's happening broadly in the Middle East when you no longer have strong secular dictatorships and you no longer have strong international support for those dictatorships.
Will the oil flow or will this be a weapon here? It looks at this point the markets are saying that disruptions are going to be minimal.
I think the markets have actually, even with that, have overreacted a bit here. There is one main pipeline that comes out of the ISIS-controlled Sunni area. It goes, I believe, to Ceyhan in Turkey. It's about 250,000 barrels a day, so it's not huge. It's been offline since March, so no changes to actual Iraqi oil production or export since ISIS began its invasion with Mosul. The main pipelines, most of Iraq's oil comes out of the Shia run south, which is a majority of the population. They have plans for expanding capacity out of Najaf in the south later this year. I expect they will go forward. So, I mean, refining capacity, big problem, as I'm sure you've seen given the attacks there. Big problem in terms of the ability for the Iraqi economy as a whole to hold together. But taking oil out of the ground and getting it out of the country for Iraq is one of the easier things to accomplish given where it's located.
Does ISIS want a full-scale sectarian Iraq Shia-Sunni war that might widen into the region? Or do they want more of what Putin's got in eastern Ukraine, a kind of generalized instability that allows them to take advantage of the situation, a kind of controlled chaos.
The rhetoric is the former. Their tactics definitely speak to the latter. They've said, they've showed maps of, you know, with in black of all of the territories they nominally lay claim to. They're a lot bigger than just pieces of Iraq and Syria. They could be used to scare a lot of folks. They've said that they want to bring this war to Baghdad, that they're going to, you know, sort of remove the Shia scourge, stain, all the terms that they use from the country. But of course, the reality is that they held on. They grabbed a whole bunch of historically Sunni territory where the population likes them, or at least likes them for the time being, a lot more than they like the Shia leadership. And then they stuck there. That's a much smarter strategy for ISIS to stick around for a while. And the problem is that what eventually dislodges ISIS, given what will be clearly very limited support for the Iraqi government coming from the United States militarily or from anyone else, what will dislodge them is them overplaying their hand. And there are two ways they can overplay their hand. They can either take too much territory and lose, which so far they're not doing, or they can simply govern badly. And I expect that that is something they will do, but that takes a long time to play out.
But in the early going, they're doing a good job of supplying people in northwestern Iraq with the supplies of food and water, and they're definitely doing a kind of a Hamas job in northwestern Iraq.
Well, this is also the Ukraine analogy, right? I mean, and you look to southeast Ukraine, it's not as if those guys want to join Russia, but they certainly like quote-unquote autonomy much better than the present government in Kiev, and the Russians have done a good job in providing humanitarian support and saying all the right things, you know, sort of little green men running around. That's very similar to the ISIS situation right now in north and northwest Iraq. There aren't a lot of folks on the ground that would actually vote for ISIS given the choice.
Right.
But they're more than happy to accept that as opposed to mm-hmm. a Shia sectarian Maliki-led Iraq, which was democratically voted in but unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Very analogous.
Let's take one step back and then five steps back. You highlighted Turkey in your early 2014 prediction of places that are going to be unstable and places to watch. Does this crisis make that more likely?
It certainly doesn't help. I mean, to the extent that you have more instability in Iraq and the Iraqi-Syria border completely open, two things happen there. First, harder to keep the Syria war at a low boil as opposed to a high boil. That, of course, means more refugees streaming into Turkey they have to pay for. Second point is the Kurdish issue. The Kurds right now de facto independent. The Turks make an awful lot of money out of trading with the Kurds, out of oil investments there. You know, almost all the white goods you'd find in Iraq are Turkish. They do a lot of building of infrastructure, real estate, all of the rest. It's going to be hard for that to maintain itself. First, with Iraq in chaos, so the oil might not be a problem, but the Turkish exposure, the broad-scale economy is going to be a problem. But then secondly, as the Kurds move towards independence, maintaining a peace process on the ground in Turkey with their own local Kurdish population, who themselves have very strong aspirations, that's going to be very hard for Erdogan to do.
Final thing, quite short here, though, but it's a big, big issue, South China Sea and China. China looks at their decision to move that oil rig into the Vietnam disputed waters. They're probably saying to themselves as they spin the globe, that was a good call.
Yeah, they said they're sending four more in, one equally disputed. The Chinese see Vietnam kind of like the Russians see Ukraine, not an ally of the United States, very different from the Philippines and Japan. And so probably not a lot of downside with them escalating on the military front in the South China Sea. So far, that seems to be going pretty well for them.
More to come there in the South China Sea. Ian Bremmer, head of the Eurasia Group. You can catch his speech at the Asia Society tonight right here in New York City, Asia Beyond the Headlines. Ian, thanks so much as always.
Always good to be with you.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.